Barbie was a cultural phenomenon this year for the makers of the toy and, well, pretty much everyone else. And it showed how any brand or organization could ride a cultural wave if they were clever. And it also demonstrates how a brand from 1959 was able to communicate and develop conversations with an audience whose age spreads across decades, emotional triggers, and needs. Welcome to the Public Relations Podcast, a 40 or so minute dive into PR stories this week and what we can learn from them, PR conversation, as well as lots of tools that we spotted for communicators too.
The Public Relations Podcast with Richard Minson.
My guest host this week is the amazing Heather Wagner-Reed from Juice Consulting, who'll be joining me in just a few seconds' time. But welcome back to the second episode of the brand new format of the Public Relations Podcast. We've got a lot to talk about this week. There are AI tools for media training, coping with situations where the press confronts you when you're not ready. We're talking about my guest campaign to get people talking about what we do with bottled water and their campaign for freewater.io. And we're going to be talking, of course, lots about Barbie as well, because there's so many techniques that you can see in there as the things that people can use if you didn't take advantage of it this year. A big thank you also to Adam Weeks from Serious Influence, who joined me for the first episode of the new format last week. And we muddled our way through for rather longer than I planned. But looking at some of the stories that we talked about last week, I mean, there was Apple. Over the past 7 days, there's been a spike in comments about the new iPhone overheating. We were talking about that and about how Apple is facing a harder time, perhaps now, because Steve Jobs set the bar so high and they've now got to deliver on that compared to other brands, which have talked more about a sort of innovative step-by-step approach. And we were also talking about leaks as well last week. And we've heard a lot from social media platforms this week with various leaks, not really confirmed about whether they're going to start charging for you to use social media platforms, whether that's going to mean we're going to get loads more ads if we don't pay. We don't quite know what's happening, but maybe this is a way that they're testing the water and seeing what's going on, as we were talking about last week. We will follow that story closely, though, of course. And don't forget as well, I want you on as a guest host on this show as well. You do not need to be a thought leader, an agency owner, or a big name PR person. This show is very different. It's about frontline PR workers. So if you have sort of 2 or so years of experience, I want you to come on and share your ideas. There's just one other thing I do want to say before we start, and that is that I don't really want to get into talking about sad global events that are going on right now. There is obviously a lot we could talk about from a PR perspective, but perhaps now is not the time for that. So I will simply say that if you are a professional communicator anywhere in the world, I hope you are safe. And of course, we are thinking of you. So I want to bring in my guest for today, Heather Wagner-Reed from Juice Consulting. A huge welcome to you. The first thing is that we're actually recording this a lot later than we planned, but it was all your own fault because you did so well with your marketing campaign, didn't you? It's your fault.
Well, I'd like to think so, but I really don't know that that's the case. But we were joking before we started that I was in a huge traffic jam because we're having AC, which is our big music festival here in Austin. Yeah. And I got here a little later. It was just log jam. And we did two parties this weekend for Spin Magazine. And yeah, I'd like to think that the party, you know, created a lot of traffic. It's still there from Saturday night.
Well, it's proof it worked, isn't it?
No, this is just a very big, very huge cultural event here in the US. And so lots of people in town enjoying it right now.
Well, I'm glad you're with us anyway. Right, let's start off with a couple of news stories. And then we've got so much to talk about in terms of celebrity stuff, which I know you have got so much you can provide some insight on that. But the first one I wanted to talk about was one of the political staff caught on camera enjoying a party with work colleagues during the COVID lockdown in the United Kingdom has been confronted by a reporter at the Conservative Party conference. Now, the reporter videoed the person leaving an event with a smile on their face as they came out of the event. They asked the person if they had a message for people whose relatives died during the lockdown. The person dropped the smile, looked a bit unimpressed, raised their head and walked on. So what should you do in a moment like this? The first thing that my gut feeling when I saw this, Heather, was that you've got to be prepared and you've got to expect this kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. I thought, uh-oh, somebody didn't train their staff properly.
I mean, I think when you watch the video, when you actually watch the clip, you can see that they went quiet. And the first question the journalist asked was, are you that person? And she didn't answer, which I thought was good. So she did at least go quiet. But the whole body language, I mean, I'll have to share the link in the newsletter this week. But she went from smiling, which you can understand. She's coming out of the event. And then she's confronted by the reporter, and then she just puts her head up like this and tries to smile. And it just, although you're in very much a kind of no-win situation here, that message was too easy to use as a journalist against her.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, my thoughts too, I think like the first thing would be anyone in a situation like that where you're in the media constantly, you always have to consider that anyone working for you could easily be pulled into a media situation too. And that's an easy, accessible thing. So this person, you know, she's working for a political party, yet was caught probably off guard, was maybe not trained with a key message to respond to a question like that, nor was she expecting it. And, you know, came across in a way that was very dismissive. So my thought is, yeah, you got to train your staff. Even if they aren't spokespeople, you still have to arm them. You still have to tell them what to do. You know, they may not be comfortable being in front of the press, et cetera, et cetera. There's ways to get around that. You know, you could just, even just, you're right, like the body language alone was what really caused the problem. I mean, she had a little bit of compassion in her face whatsoever.
I've been at these political conferences, so I know the way that the journalists are moving around, and it's very difficult to avoid it if you are in that public eye. But it's I kind of feel that the fact that she didn't say anything was probably the safest thing. The problem for me was the body language, because it's like one of the common techniques that politicians are obviously using all the time is that when they're confronted by a bunch of journalists asking awkward questions, is you basically pretend that you didn't hear them. Mm-hmm. You appear that you were, it was all just a lot of noise. You keep a sort of natural demeanor, and then you just keep walking to that safe space wherever you can do. But the problem I felt with her was that her body language just went, you know, she just lifted her nose up. I mean, do you think, because my concern also with someone as young as that is that she maybe couldn't have handled the follow-up questions that would have come along. So I wonder if being quiet was the safest bet. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it came across as a lack of experience with media and just being uncomfortable in the situation and not knowing what to do. Unfortunately for her, though, it was like a media moment that it's going to be hard to live down. You know, if she does have an opinion, you know, what I would say is go on your social media and express that later. Like if she does feel compassion, if she does feel regret for her behavior, you know, she does have a chance to say something about it now. And it could be as simple as I was caught off guard. You know, I didn't really expect that at the time. Obviously you want to be authentic about it. And that's how we work and advise our clients, you know, is just go to your place of authenticity. And I'd hope she does feel some compassion for the situation, the people that were affected.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's such a difficult one when you're in the world of politics and as well, because the journalists are very much there to try and catch you out. And, you know, they're not there for speeches. They're not there for policy. They need those little moments. It almost ties into, you know, you're an expert in the celebrity space, but it almost makes me think at times that political conferences should be focused more on those micro PR moments than on the big speech. I mean, okay, the speeches are very much aimed at the party faithful who are there, but it's like if you want to get that attention from the press, it feels like you need lots of little PR moments.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we don't do a lot in politics, but I was in Washington a couple of years ago with a leadership group, and I noticed that there were people all over Washington at the Capitol doing interviews constantly, you know, various Congress members and Senate members, and just doing little snippets of interviews. And it was a very dynamic environment where if they could catch you while you're walking from one meeting to another and grab a comment, that's when they would go in for it. So that was kind of interesting to observe. It was very spontaneous, and obviously they had to be media ready constantly. You never knew when somebody's going to ask you something.
So I think it's part of the job,
you know?
Yeah. But I think it's funny, isn't it, that I think sometimes people think that media training is something I'll do when the crisis hits. And it's like, okay, you haven't got to sit down and spend 10 hours doing media training necessarily before a crisis hits, but you've at least got to do some to get yourself familiar with what that experience might be like.
Absolutely. And a lot of times people have no idea, you know, A, what's expected, B, the amount of control they actually have over a media moment, because you really do. If you're prepared, you can take control of that and turn it into something beneficial for yourself.
Yeah.
Three, you know, how important key messages are. You know, just understanding your key messages, even if it's not for the media, but you're in an elevator and you have to do an elevator pitch. Like, how are you going to talk about your issues in one brief moment? And the key messaging exercise is great because it gives you a sense of confidence when you're talking to others in any situation.
Yeah, and maybe that's exactly what was needed there. Okay, let's move on to Barbie. I mean, we're going to be dominating today, but there's just so many different elements of this. I mean, first of all, let's just have a quick look at a story to do with Barbie. On the 1st of July this year, Google Trends showed that interest in the word Barbie rocketed. No real surprise, was it? It lasted until the last week of July, and then it plummeted almost as quickly, actually. A few days ago, it reached fairly similar levels to where it was before the movie, but still very much up. Now, for marketing people, there was a gap of roughly a month where everyone was talking about it, even if you'd never played with Barbie or never seen the movie, which is the case with me. Mm-hmm. But during that month, there was a situation where a bus was seen driving down a road in London with a huge figure of Margot Robbie on the side dressed as Barbie. And the bus was all pink to match the movie's colour palette, of course. But moments later, a van pulled up in front of it with a huge pink banner talking about a pink sale for an online retailer called Not on the High Street. No mention of Barbie, but it's obvious what was going on. Now, while this might sound like sort of traditional marketing, it raises this whole question for PR people as to whether it is easier to join an existing conversation than to try and start a new one. When can you try and hijack it? Is it safe to do it? I mean, what were your initial thoughts about this story, Heather?
Well, I thought it was fascinating because, you know, it made me dig a little deeper into some of the marketing strategy around the movie, and it turns out that hundreds and hundreds of brands actually almost paid to play in the Barbie space with their products during that time, and doing, like, you know, deals with Mattel, deals with Warner Brothers. Like, I don't know all the legalities, but they had to, you know, you almost had to pay to use that Barbie brand on your stuff. And I think with this, the example of this is someone didn't pay to play. They just went with the pink bus and, you know, still probably got a lot of leverage out of it because the consumers didn't really know the difference. They're just seeing the color pink and they're thinking, oh my God, there's another brand who's on board. How did this happen? Why is everybody, you know, marketing the Barbie movie?
Yeah. But it's because everyone's talking about it though, isn't it? It's that it's already in the zeitgeist. So simply by saying pink, you're tapping into that.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I was telling you too, like I was walking through, I was coming home from vacation and I was in an airport in Italy. And lo and behold, I found these beautiful pieces of pasta that I brought for my daughter.
Oh, you'd have to lift Barbie. It up a bit more. If you're watching on YouTube, you will see
Barbie
how that.
Pasta. I mean, who wouldn't want this? What little girl wouldn't want this? What mother, you know, who grew up, who's in, you know, my age, who wouldn't think, oh, that's amazing. I got to get that. Great price point. But, you know, this is a brand, a significant pasta brand that obviously decided to go with the film branding. And they had aprons. They had whole boxes of goodies to take home. And I think the phenomenon was that this, the movie and the product, so many aspects of this spoke to people emotionally in the sense of it wasn't just, you know, it was the Barbie brand. It was also the music. It was the fashion.
Yeah.
Obviously, you didn't know what the movie was about until you saw the movie. So it was also the anticipation of what this would be. But I think once you saw the movie, your perspective even changed further because of some of the incredible messaging in the movie. I mean,
we'll have to talk about Barbie as a brand itself. But it's just this whole thing about kind of getting involved in conversations which are already happening, isn't it? I mean, I was thinking about another example of this. There's a street in the city of York in the middle of England called the Shambles. And this is the street that they modeled the street, and I'm trying to remember the name, Diagon Alley from Harry Potter. It's a sort of shopping street where they have all the magic stuff like that. And they modeled it on that because it's a higgledy-piggledy, really old-looking street. And once it was kind of known that this street was what had been used as a model for that, there was a shop that set up on that street called something like the Wizarding Shop. And it had sort of wands and bits and pieces from Harry Potter. And then I think it was about 6 months later, the official Harry Potter shop set up the other side of the street. But you can see how, again, you know, that shop, the Wizarding Shop, was incredibly popular when it first set up because people are already talking about it, isn't it? It's about getting involved in conversations. People already, I sometimes feel that people spend so much time sitting around at the boardroom trying to think of a new idea. And yet, actually, it's those conversations are already happening.
Yeah. That is so true. And I think it's also just the way we are as a society right now and what's really resonating for people at this time, you know, post-pandemic, making a resurgence. Some of the issues that we're facing as far as, you know, the female role in society and diversity issues, all those things. I mean, these are very, very poignant issues right now. So, and they have been for a long time, but for some reason, you know, even our our youth especially are more aware than ever because of platforms like TikTok, et cetera. I mean, so the kids of our generation are demanding social responsibility. So because of all of this happening, I think there is a resonance there. There's something people are getting excited about. And it, then once it starts, it's like, it just kind of has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And I was telling you earlier, like I saw that with the recent concerts that Beyonce did and Taylor Swift did. And I brought my silver Beyonce hat to show everybody because it's like, same thing. Not same
again,
thing,
this is
like,
why you got to watch this show on YouTube, because you can see how they're putting on a hat now and it's awesome.
I actually made this hat. I mean, well, I bought the hat on Amazon and then I painted it and decorated it and all that stuff. I'm very proud of my hat.
It's fantastic. But,
you know, similarly, you know, you have these things going on where, you know, on the fashion sense and just like, how do you express how people coming together to express themselves in the spirit of something that gives them joy. You know, at the Beyonce concert, everyone was dressed up in silver and it just was so delightful. You know, so much fun. And what effect that had on our economy. You know, there was, speaking of stories, $4.5 billion of an effect on the economy that each of these tours apparently had. And that's an interesting number to examine. Anyway, I'm going on and on.
It was like, there was a story we talked about last week, which was Chipotle, and they had this quesadilla and that they introduced to the menu. And they introduced it because some influencers were talking about it. So they could have spent all their time coming up with this new idea for a quesadilla, working out the marketing campaign and all this kind of stuff, and spent ages just trying to get it to a certain level. And yet, because these influencers already started that conversation, all they actually had to do was then add it to the menu. And I can't remember, was it like a 25% increase in sales they got straight away?
Yeah. Oh, it's insane.
But that's the point, isn't it? It's about taking advantage and utilizing what is already being talked about, is it kind of feels to me.
Yeah. And it's amazing because nowadays things can spread so fast. The whole influencer, you know, part of what we do has changed very much what we do. I mean, my agency used to just focus primarily on earned media with traditional press. And now we have an entire influencer, service bucket where we reach out with influencers and they're just as powerful sometimes, you know, in a different way, but their ability to spread information quickly is, you know, cannot be underestimated. So when you have, you know, a certain amount of followers around the world and you just do that one post, I mean, you have the ability to change, you know, opinion. You have the ability to do a call to action. You have the ability to share a product and get people excited about it. And it's pretty amazing. And
that's really interesting, because if you're watching influencers who are talking about your product, the temptation, I suppose, is to wait for them to say something that you want to put out in your current list of statements that you want to get across. Mm. How cautious do you need to be about jumping on something when you're not quite sure whether it fits directly with what you want to say? I mean, what sort of criteria, how would you approach it? Because it's like with Chipotle, initially when that first came out, there were actually signs going up in some of the branches saying, we don't do TikTok trends here, which was a terrible mistake now when they look back on it. But it's like, at what point do you actually embrace these things? I mean, from your experience.
I mean, I would definitely say that there's a, you know, the whole thing with influencers, there's a relationship there too. I mean, just like the press, first of all, you have to do your research. You have to know what they're like. And if there's somebody that's risky at all, you know, they might say something bad about your brand. I mean, don't mess with that. If you really want to be protective about your brand. On the other hand, you can brief an influencer just like you brief a press person. Mm. It's about having an authentic conversation. And I think a lot of it is, hey, here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's what we're trying to do. Obviously, we'd love for you to help us with this. You know, here's our product. Can you take my pasta and do something really, really cool with it? And what do you think? And I think it's that kind of human interaction that matters. It's the authenticity of it. Obviously, again, like, do your research. You'd never want to put yourself on a news program or, something that has any kind of, I'd say, where the journalist is not fair in their reporting or, you know what I mean? Like, so I feel like influencers are similar.
That's a really good way. Yeah, comparing it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing with influencers is it's not just about people who are sitting there making content for social media. And we always think of influencers also of anyone who has a large following. So it could be a celebrity, you know, it could be, you could put politicians in that bucket, you know, anyone who has a large following who would be willing to share your information. So, in that respect, each one would be handled very differently. You know,
I mean, there was that research from Ogilvy that came out quite recently, which was talking about the fact that CMOs are very much looking now for influencers on LinkedIn and nano influencers. They're looking for expert voices. So, you know, I think often people think of influencers as just being makeup teenagers doing makeup tutorials, and it's an influencer is someone who has a following, who is trusted and respected as an authentic voice, isn't it? God, we could talk about it. Let's talk about Barbie. Let's go into a bit more detail on this. I mean, part of PR, of course, is finding the message that resonates with people. And without understanding what triggers people, we can't create that conversation. And some recent research showed that people have very clear ideas about whether they want a brand, for example, to be old or new. According to the Achilles heel of established brands from the Journal of Marketing Research that came out recently, when they buy tech, they want to buy from a new upstart company. But if you're buying furniture or watch, they want the 100-year-old brand with heritage. The conclusion was, if we want quality, we go for an old brand. If we want innovation, we go for a new one. So then we come to Barbie and things get more complex. Do we want an old Barbie? Do we want a new one? What is Barbie? What is the conversation people are having? Barbie, of course, was launched on March the 9th, 1959, at the New York International Toy Fair as Barbie Teenage Fashion Model. And it's a cherished memory that many people have from growing up. But it couldn't stay in its 1950s form. In recent years, of course, criticism of outdated ideas led to more body shape, skin tones, a more confident, realistic look to modernize it. Now, you might think that the brand now is very much focused on being new. But then you look at like the movie this year that played very much into nostalgia. It had a PG rating, not a universal one. So presumably it was aimed at mums remembering their youth. So Barbie is having to play this delicate game between a brand that is based on modernness and nostalgia. So what can we learn from what Barbie is doing? I mean, the first thought I had on this is that you've got a company here that knows they have different segments to their market. And obviously in modern society, a fragmented society now, we can't think of our audience as one type of person anymore. That perfect persona simply doesn't exist anymore, does it? I think they did that straight away. They've done that really well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they sat around in a room with the highest level of marketing gurus that they have on their team and define their target audience as one of the very first things. And I bet you anything, as time went on and they started to see the reaction of the public to this film, I bet you anything they at some point had to expand that and think about, oh my God, it's now triggering this group or that group or this demographic. I mean, you know, I always feel like the marketing plan can be a living and breathing kind of document, you know?
Has to be.
Who would have thought that this would have become like a movement and so many brands, I mean, sure, the brands were coming on board all the way up until the week of the movie coming out. So, you know, that being said, I think defining your target demographic in a marketing, you know, strategy is very important. And I tend to do that, obviously, when we do media campaigns. It's like, what audience are we trying to reach? And obviously what publications can find that?
And for this particular message though, isn't it? Because it's like when you look at Barbie, you think, well, here you were trying to reach, you know, obviously it's stereotyping, but you're trying to reach mums who are remembering Barbie when they were a kid. All the imagery, all the sort of classic designs of clothing, the styling of the marketing was all very much aimed at nostalgia rather than saying, buy an up-to-date modern Barbie, you little child, wasn't it? Right. It was a different message, but for the same product.
I mean, I'm one of those moms. I have two kids. I grew up with Barbie, you know. My daughter is 11. She grew up with Barbie. My son, who's 13, even though he didn't grow up, he grew up with it ancillarily. He was even excited to go. And so I ended up taking six children to the show, all of us dressed in pink. We did a faux limo experience with my car, but it was a happening. It was like an event. It was an it was like going to the prom, you know?
Yeah.
And so the nostalgia thing hit really hard for all of us. And agreed, you know, it was in so many ways, it was almost like the voice of our time speaking through this film to address, you know, some of the things that we've, as a woman, you know, we wanted to hear from the media, the popular media. And it resonated with all these kids of different ages, different sexes. You know what I'm saying? Like it was very timely, very poignant, very, very on for right now.
I mean, it's interesting. Do you think it was more targeted at the mums than the youngsters, though? I mean, because
it was PG-13, so yes.
Yeah. It's like, you know, with cars, okay? One of the interesting things that's come out from sort of car research is that the natural thought with a car is that a man picks a car. Mm-hmm. But actually, no, it isn't. It's the women have a massive influence on what is picked. So yeah. When you're doing your conversation building, your PR on this, you've got to think about, well, what might be of interest to that person, to that particular audience, isn't it? So it is about being very clear, not just who the one persona is, but who the different aspects of the market is. You've got to gear up your message and your lines too, so that it appeals to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the classic, you know, you've got kids. I haven't got kids. So when I hear an advert that starts off with the words, when you're taking your kids to school, I switch off because that doesn't engage with me. So it's about getting our core lines to resonate mm-hmm. with the audience we're trying to reach, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Well, at first I was thinking, you know, obviously the parents decide how to spend the money. You know, they're the ones who give their kids money or spend the money, you know, so that's a starting point there too. I did think it was interesting that it was PG-13, but I think it was probably well rated for the content. Mm-hmm. But that didn't stop those of us who had kids under 13 from bringing them. I mean, I feel like a lot of younger kids came to see that regardless. So yeah, it was, I even missed the first part of the movie because there were so many people attending the night we went that the line for popcorn was 30 minutes deep. And I swore, I was like, I was there for the kids. So I got them the popcorn. They're watching the movie. I have to go back and watch the whole thing. but I think, you know, it's one of those movies that no one will forget this summer. It's been a very, very interesting summer for a lot of very, you know, pro women, cultural events. Let's put it that way.
Again, we're talking about things that are having the conversation. I mean, how do you think we can apply what Barbie's done to other businesses? So, I mean, let's say that we've got a question coming up about a heart health charity. Mm. You know, if you look at that, for example, and I'm guessing here because I'm not an expert in that stuff, but I imagine that you've got a lot of different case studies within heart health. You've got probably older people. You've got people that are carrying too much weight, people who are young who've got congenital conditions. So to appeal to those different segments, you're going to have to come up with slightly different messaging, aren't you?
Mm, yes.
I'm just thinking about how we can apply those techniques to smaller businesses, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
Yeah. I think that's where, I teach a class about PR and marketing. I'm always talking about how strategic alliances and community partners are so important because they help bring their own marketing value to what you're doing, but also it helps to show that you have a conscience as a business and that you have something besides just trying to be profitable. And that's what really resonates with people. It also resonates with media and media sponsors. I mean, it's almost like creating a, you know, as a business, looking for those types of alignments just opens the door for so much more to happen, you know, so many good things to happen, obviously. Mm. So I do think that, you know, charities, nonprofits partnering together for the better of mankind, womankind, you know, is a great thing. And building out your audience by doing those things is great too. It's just like a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, we had a really interesting chat with Alexandra Annable from a charity called Tech Fugees a while back. And she was saying that a lot of her PR work now, it's nothing to do with press releases. I mean, she actually says that she bans press releases from her office. She sees it as being about relationship building. And that means, so she doesn't care whether she puts out the story and it gets in the press or a partner she's working with puts out that story and it gets in the press.
Right.
As long as the message is getting across.
That's right.
And it's exactly that point you're making there. It's about the partnerships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Accelerates that voice.
Oh, yeah. At the end of the day, it's a domino effect. And I think like even just putting those high level relationships together can do so much on a client level. Like our agency, we're constantly looking like, how do we pair our clients together? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much value in that, opening those conversations. And it's like that with across the board. It's like authentic relationships with media, authentic relationships with local influencers, authentic you know, connections in the community. And that's what our job is, you know?
Yeah, it's so, beyond the press release now, isn't it? It's got to be now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Let's move on from Barbie. I want to talk about this free water campaign that you've been involved in, because I remember when you sent me across, this video when we were talking about this, and it had me really laughing, but it had a great message in it. I mean, it was swearing, but they cut out the swearing, but it was just the way it was done. It was so funny. But tell us a bit about this campaign, how you set it up, what you were trying to achieve with it.
Absolutely. So, and I'm glad we're talking about it, because it is a global brand. I mean, this is the phenomenon about free water, is that it is known around the world. And for some very specific reasons, it is a startup out of Austin, Texas. But they have done an incredible job on their socials, and specifically TikTok. And you know what happens when something goes viral on TikTok? It's like that, you know, magical moment where all of a sudden you can increase your followers, you know, from 5,000 to 100,000 instantaneously.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful medium. It's powerful for all kinds of industries. I see it happen in the music industry, you know, breakout songs, breakout hits, breakout artists constantly. So what free water is, and I have another example. I brought a lot of examples today. So
you've got to watch on YouTube as well. I mean, this show used to be only audio. We're only just starting to do YouTube, but have a look on the YouTube channel as well.
Something for people to see. So this is one of the bottles that we had created for my company. It was our 15-year anniversary last year. So I did
need to
add
a bit more as well, just on YouTube, so we can see it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is an ad that actually has a picture of my team on it. And we say fresh squeezed vitality. The company's called Juice. So that's our tagline.
Yes.
And basically it has a lot of information on here, like a QR code where you can go directly to our website or to our Instagram page. It also says if you mention this ad, you get a discount on services. So there's a call to action here. But it's meant to be an interactive product. So the idea behind free water is that the water is free because it's paid for by ads. Mm-hmm. So the reason I love this campaign is because, first of all, it's so ingenious. Like, it's a genius concept that the founder, Josh Clifford's, came up with to create, you know, free products that benefit mankind, or, you know, the humankind. I keep saying mankind. I meant humans all around the world.
We know what you mean. It's okay.
Because there are water scarcity issues around the world. And so the company's partnered with WellAware in Austin to build water wells. And every 10 cents from every beverage that is created or sold to an advertiser goes back to these water wells. So anyway, there's a charitable element, a philanthropic element. The other two things that are really cool about it is that these are great promo items. We give them away. You know, we did it for South By. We did them for our anniversary. I still give these out to clients constantly. People look at it like, what is this? Oh, how cool. But their TikTok videos, if you go to Free Water's TikTok, you'll see have been going viral constantly. Mm. There's one on there that got 30 million likes.
It's a great idea. I mean, how did you approach the campaign behind this, though, and helping them?
Well, you know, it was a very, I'd say, by the books kind of PR campaign initially, but it changed a lot. So first of all, was getting the messaging together, trying to help really simplify the messaging, because Josh is a genius. You know, his head is like Elon Musk.
Full of ideas. That's always a challenge. You know? Yeah.
And so it's like working with the CEO to kind of make it easier for people to consume and understand was the first, you know, call of order, getting our key messages straight. And then when we finally got through all of that, you know, we figured out, okay, we need to announce that this thing is coming. We want to create our media list. We want to hit up, again, who's our audience? And we came up with probably 10 different types of media audiences that we could deliver this to. I mean, there was consumer.
It's quite wide-ranging, this. There's a lot of different angles.
There was so many things. I mean, you got tech and innovation. You've got, you know, Austin-based startup. You have beverage news. You have consumer press. You have product-based press. You have basically business press. You have
it's just endlessly. Yeah. So you identified those ones.
So we came up with our media list and we went really wide. And we also, I like to start things with a bang. So I always tell my clients, let's do an event. Let's do an activation. Let's do something where we have a call to action of some sort. Yeah. So, you know, early on, we were getting up close to South by Southwest, which is here in Austin. And so they activated during the startup crawl, which is at Capital Factory. And they had all their products out. With startup crawl is literally like one of the most packed tech events you could attend probably ever.
Yeah.
And people from all around the world. So Freewater is giving out their waters, and it made a splash. Mm-hmm. At that point, Capital Factory invited them to become part of their, I guess, portfolio, investment portfolio. Like, if they come and be at our offices, we want you to be one of our, you know, startups.
Awesome.
So Capital Factory took notice. And then after that, we started getting a lot of influencers coming. And these are people willing to do it without a, like a cost involved. Because
so these
were
people coming to you just because they love the story. So it is the classic earned media, isn't it? Where people used to cover something because it was a story.
That's right. It's when you start doing the PR push to the PR pool or the PR, like, oh, now we got to manage all the things coming in.
Yeah.
So things switched very fast. And something very interesting happened, too, is that because they're getting so much action on social, media were contacting them through their socials. Yeah. So through TikTok, through Instagram, asking for interviews, podcasts, YouTubers. Mm. I mean, especially people that lived online were coming to the company. Yeah. And it became a little bit of a household name in Austin because I'd bring it up in my class with 20-somethings, and they'd say, you know, there's this client, Freewater. Oh, we know Freewater from TikTok. Yeah. Well, that was happening around the world. And if you look at how the brand is perceived around the world because of their prominence on TikTok, people see it as a major brand, you know? Yeah. And it is, you know, hey, that is what branding's all about, right?
So the challenge then was basically managing all this incoming inbound PR then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It had gone from an outbound PR to an inbound PR campaign.
Absolutely. And I mean, the team, you know, it's a small team. So we're the agency. I'm also on the team. I've been on the team as well. It's kind of an interesting relationship because I love the company so much. I also dived into this. So, you know, giving my whatever expertise, connections, et cetera, that I could. But, you know, they were getting inbound press on the socials. And so that became another stream of opportunity.
And so, how did you keep the narrative going then? I mean, there obviously are so many different possibilities I can think of straight away. But what did you focus on? How did you do that?
Well, we started to just kind of put little tidbits out there about what was to come, to expect from the company. So the other thing is, there's two things. One that I find so compelling about the brand is they want to create the world's first free vending machine and put these vending machines all around wherever they possibly can.
I love it.
And they also want to create the world's first free supermarket, Amazon 2.0, where, and this is something that Josh should really be speaking to, not me, because Josh is the inventor of this idea. Yeah. But the concept is, you know, creating a space where people can come and get free products. You know, of course, there's going to have to be a system involved. You can't go just take them all. But, there's a certain amount of interaction with the product maybe to get it. Yeah. Like with the vending machine, you have to watch an ad to get the product.
Yeah.
But it is a way of, yet again, creating that, you know, consumer brand interface on multiple levels. So it's not just then the ad on the can, it's also the video you see to watch to actually get the canned water.
How are you managing this now? Because this sounds like you've got a billion potential ideas. So how are you working on what to focus on? Because as you say, there's only so many hours in the day that you can do this.
Yeah. I mean, right now it's like PR is one piece of a bigger situation. I think that their socials have been so effective that, you know, it's kind of it's like a ginormous, it's like the ultimate PR goal is that you have press coming to you all the time. You don't really have a lack of coverage and you've got these socials that are just going crazy. I think we're kind of in between media moments right now. I think when the vending machine comes out and other projects are announced, funding rounds come out. I mean, they're still looking for investors, things like that. So right now, I'd say we're just going through this cycle of things are really good. You know, things are actually just continuing to happen.
But you've got presumably a sort of plan for the coming year or so of what you would like to try and hit, and then you'll adapt from there, right?
Yeah. I think that, again, South By is going to be a big moment because it is an Austin company, right? So you get a lot of eyeballs, a lot of tech press. There's even, you could pitch this to any kind of press because any type of industry could use it.
Yeah.
Music. Yeah. We've already put musicians on the can. So that's been really fun. Take them right to their Spotify page. Boom. Yeah. Take them right to where you can buy tickets to a show. Boom. We've done activations with films. Mm-hmm. We've done activations with, you know, a lot of other tech companies. We're hopefully getting ready to do something with the Army during South By, who's another client of ours, and they have a huge tech, arm called the Army Applications Lab. P- people just find it to be a multi-use product that serves a lot of different purposes.
It's a great story, isn't it?
You all feel good about it because it's giving back to charity. Yeah. So in turn, well,
one question I love to ask with things like this is that, you know, PR and the world is changing all the time. Has there been anything that you've learned in particular from this campaign which kind of surprised you, or, you know, is something that's like, oh, we've got to do that in future now because this works now?
Okay, I think the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway for me, and this goes across the board with brands that, and I could, you could relate it to the Barbie movie, but when something takes on a life of its own, right, you go into a campaign, you don't ever really know when, if that's going to happen. That's the ultimate goal, right? It's even like that with music. If the music is good, it does take on a life of its own. Yes, you need to market it. Yes, you need to get it out there. You need to get it to the consumers. But at a certain point, things go viral. And that viral aspect of a campaign changes everything. Because instead of you being on the side of you're pitching.
You're trying to push that story out there. Listen to us, please. Yeah,
you're more on the receiving end. I mean, when I worked with Beyonce for many years, and it was like that with her. I mean, there were so many interview requests. I wasn't doing PR. I was on management, the management team. But there were so many PR requests coming in constantly. At a certain point, you just had to shut it down and say, whoa, she only has so many hours in a day. So there's going to be certain things she can do. And a lot of things she's not going to do. And that is just the reality of a big brand. Yeah. And again, Barbie, I think it took on a life of its own, you know?
It is the challenge though, isn't it? Because when it's coming in, it's like in politics, you know, when you're dealing with political PR, journalists need politicians to give them content so that they can run their newspapers or outlets and stuff like that. So it is very much an inbound situation. You're always trying to push out an agenda of what you want them to talk about. They've got their own idea and they're constantly coming to you for that. So it's very different from trying to put out a sort of consumer new idea brand. That's an interesting point. Yeah, it's that viral moment, which is really what struck you.
Yeah, I actually have to say, I mean, I've had the luck of working on both sides. I mean, I've been on certain campaigns where you are pushing out and many things where you're on the incoming. And it's an interesting dichotomy. I always talk to my team who are younger about what the nuances are of both, you know, and it's probably a little bit more fun when you're on the inbound because it's, you know, certainly easier. You're not like struggling like.
Yeah, you're just managing it rather than going, oh, why won't someone listen?
Right. Yeah, you have to unfortunately learn how to say no a lot, which is not easy, not fun. But it is a reality that there's only so many hours in a day, and at a certain point, things get so big that there's a cost to entry for things, you know.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Right, we've got a few more things to talk about in the show today, so we will have to race on because there's so much I'd like to talk about with Heather. It's so interesting, this stuff. Don't forget, the newsletter comes out every week. It is free. It's basically just my conclusions from what I got out of the show each week. So if you would like to get that, head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com/subscribe and you can get that there. Quick AI story for you. I can't remember where I saw this story again, but I thought it was quite interesting. It was talking about how AI could help improve media training, and having done quite a bit of that myself, and Heather's done quite a bit of that too. It's like part of the technique is playing devil's advocate, of course, when you're asking those awkward questions. And whilst AI can't replicate the power of a human asking those questions, and the intonation in your voice and stuff like that, the article was saying, well, maybe it can come up with ideas for the kind of questions you might be asked. So I thought I'd give it a try. And I actually entered into ChatGPT and I said, imagine you are an aggressive TV interviewer and you want to catch me out. Give me a question about the use of PR in business. And it said, I quote, it said, all right, given that public relations has been criticized for manipulating public opinion and essentially whitewashing corporate actions, can you explain why businesses should be trusted when they invest heavily in PR campaigns? Isn't it just a sophisticated way of covering up their misdeeds?
Oh my gosh, no. Hilarious. Wow.
It's quite interesting, though. I mean, that was me putting in a very basic prompt, but you can imagine that if you put in a news article, or you put in that something that a journalist was going to interview you has written before, then it could look through that and suggest some more ideas and act as a brainstorming tool that can help you come up with some questions to ask the person that you're working with. Yeah. I thought that was quite interesting.
That is fascinating. That is truly fascinating because, you know, right now, a lot of publicists are using databases like Muckrack or Cision or Meltwater or something to track, you know, keyword searches, you know, of course, Google too. But to get the research they need to find the journalists they need to, you know, get to the heart and soul of how to pitch somebody, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right, like these tools now can be very much delivered by AI. Mm-hmm. You could easily have that do your keyword searches on, you know, multiple fronts and find out potentially even more than you might doing it on your own.
But it's,
you
know, it's just triggering the type of questions as well, isn't it? I mean, you still need someone, you know, someone like us actually doing the aggressive questioning and actually putting the people under pressure. But when it comes to actually coming up with a bunch more questions to throw at someone and different ways of saying it, I thought that was quite interesting.
It is really interesting. Yeah.
Let's have a look at the community bag now. And this is a section where we answer any questions or comments or any thoughts that have come in via LinkedIn or via the newsletter or via email. And let's just have a quick look at what we've got here. So I mentioned this one a little bit earlier. Here's a question for Heather and I. We have a heart health charity. What's the best approach to building strong relationships with influencers in our sector? Oh, actually, influencers. This one. Let's put it over to you, Heather. What's your first thought on that for heart health?
Well, what I like to do is, I like to do a very, I'd say a lot of it involves research and doing a deep dive into who you find are the most appropriate influencers for your brand. And, you know, when we do that for our clients, our team just goes at it. You know, we do the research. Ask your AI platform, because that probably will get you some information too, but it starts with research. It starts with really trying to find these people online and, you know, maybe doing some keyword searches on Instagram to see what comes up there. Same thing with, you know, any social platform, but really starting to put them into a database on your own and organize that so that you know how to find these people, you know what they're all about. And then how do you reach out to them? What's the most appropriate way? A lot of times it's just a simple message via their social platform to get them. A lot of times people don't know how to work with influencers or how they, you know, how to use them. Sometimes they're like, are these people I have to pay to work with? Are they in kind? And honestly, the answer is, yeah, it's both. You know, influencers, some of them do need to be paid. Some do that for their livelihood, and others will do something for you in kind. It's usually the smaller, more, you know, community-based ones. But you can start an ambassador program with influencers who have an actual tie to your issue and give them a leadership role that actually incentivizes them to want to be involved. Yeah. Like, that's a very simple approach, you know?
Yeah.
What would make them want to do this for you is a great thing to think about.
Yeah, you've covered so many of the points I was going to say about the ambassador thing as well, is getting people involved in it, allowing them to feel part, and they're more likely to be talking about it in a positive way, and also providing you with useful feedback as well as to what that messaging needs to be, isn't it? And also that point we made earlier about nano influencers, it's not just about makeup, teenagers doing makeup tutorials. It's who are the people that are actually reaching the market that you want to reach. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other question, how do you handle a situation when a client and the media have conflicting interests or narratives? I think that's almost always the case, actually, in the world that I used to work in political PR. One of the things straight away is that, you know, clients always want free advertising. Journalists don't want to give you free advertising. They're in the business of getting the advertising to pay for their jobs and paying for their salary. I think if you're struggling with this, if you're struggling with trying to get the message across, it's because you haven't bridged your story to what they need. You've got to think about bridging your message. Any thoughts, Heather?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, doing a deep dive again into who this writer is. What are they interested in? How do they work? What do they like to cover? And if it is a fit, if it's something that if you want this person to cover you, you really need to think about what's going to be a value of interest to them. You can't just cold pitch them your idea or cold pitch them your product without going through that process. And it's very important to think about it from their perspective, you know, as a journalist. And really, I love, again, going back to key messages. If you know what your key messages are before you even go into an interview, and you are very confident in that, then no matter what the questions are, you can always go back to what your key messages are. And that is trying to integrate both the answer to the question and why you're there in the first place, you know, perfectly good example of what you learn in media training. But it's important, because sometimes an interview can go off to a whole nother direction that you didn't even come to talk about. And you don't want that to happen necessarily. So
it's bridging. I still love the word bridging, because it does sum it up. It's about connecting what they're saying with what you want to say and making sure that you're still delivering an answer that sounds like what they want as well.
Yeah. But, you know, again, like, as a PR person, and going back to what you were saying earlier, it's like, I think authenticity is so important in all of this. It's like, I never want to personally work with clients that I have to feel like I have to cover something up or not be authentic with. So it's like, if you can be authentic with what you're saying and you're there with a belief and you want to advocate for something or you want, you know, that's, to me, those are very important values to have when dealing with the media. I know it may not work in every PR situation, but those are the things I like to work on.
Yeah. Authenticity is underrated, but it is a hard skill to do because you know, everyone's got an agenda, isn't it? And it's trying to get into the, well, what do you really feel? What is actually going on in your gut rather than that core? Just focusing so hard on that sentence you have to say. I remember doing an interview, many, many years ago with a council official. And I asked about six different ways the same thing. And he just said the same sentence each time as his answer. I mean, very slightly different, but it was basically the same sentence. And it's like, well, yes, you said your message. Sure enough, you did. You said message. But do you know what the audience reacted to that? It didn't work. It didn't get across because people, all they heard was you being inauthentic. That was the message they actually got. So, you know, ultimately, what is the goal of communication? It's to get your message across. And if you failed, even though you said the words, you failed.
True that.
It could go on for hours.
It does. It can become, you know, a problem, a PR problem, if you don't really know how to convey that. So it's true.
Exactly. Well, if you've got a question for the community bag, let me know. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. It is great to hear of your messages. I know I get a lot of DMs on that. You're welcome to comment on anything that I put on there publicly as well. But I know a lot of people like to keep things private because they don't want to mention the organization or the people that they're working with as well. So feel free. You can always connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm perfectly happy to take questions there. So let me know if you've got some of those. We are basically at the end of the show. There was only one other question, which comes back to the whole thing about the future of PR and what your vision is where you think PR is going to go in the next few years. We've obviously got the AI challenge. You know, press is declining in terms of its influence compared to what it was in the past. What do you think are the main challenges now for people working on the front line of PR today?
Well, I think a lot of it is just how fast our industry is changing. I mean, we have, in my life cycle of, you know, almost three decades of working in PR, it's drastically different than how it was when we started. You know, I remember sending a fax and a journalist actually picking up a phone and placing a story on CNN. It was like, that's what happened when I first started. It's like, I got stories. Nowadays, it's hard to track people down. You know, it's hard. Post-pandemic, people are not in an office. So connecting with them in a human way is difficult. So you got to email them. Then you got to find them on social media. Then you got to follow their Twitters. You got to do this. You got to do that. If you're not having lunch with them or in the market with them, it's difficult to form those relationships. So that's number one. So, you know, if you're not in a major media market, you got that working against you sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then also just the changes that social media have brought us, including now AI and, you know, influencers. You know, it's like, I have no doubt that it's going to be a completely different type of industry in 5-10 years yet again. Like, it just reinvents itself time and time again. I still like the basics, though. I still love the things I learned in college and I still practice that. But there's so much more. There's so much more you have to know now.
It's interesting you're saying about the relationship thing as well. We've got a chap called John Woodruff who's runs an agency specializing in the cycling industry in the Netherlands. And he's coming on the show in a couple of weeks. And so much of his work is just about networking with other journalists, but by going on bicycle rides with them, by just going to having a music event and chatting with them while they're listening to the music about their hobby, which is cycling. So as a result of that, he's not pushing a topic. He's simply sharing his excitement with friends.
Yeah.
And that's it's a really powerful way of doing it now.
I think it's such a very, very incredible relationship, the journalist and the publicist, because in fact, one of our local writers here for our daily paper once shared with my class that one of his most important relationships, his whole career as a writer, was a publicist that would give him stories before anyone else, give him the exclusive.
Yeah.
And this was a person that helped him develop his role in the music industry and writing about things and some of the bigger artists. And so he was saying how much he appreciated that relationship with this person. And I'm sure she felt the same about him. And it's a very, if you can form those kinds of, you know, direct bonds.
A useful, authentic source. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It's great for everybody. I mean, everybody does their job and gets what they need to get done, you know? So
Heather, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for battling through the traffic as well.
Oh, gosh.
For getting to this. It's been so good talking to you. Are you going to come on again sometime?
I'd love that.
We would love to have you.
Okay.
I feel this is one of those shows whereby we could just talk for 10 hours, but people have got day jobs to get to as well. So we're going to have to round it up there. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
There's just a couple of things left for me to say before I round up the show. If you're running a campaign, let me know what you're up to and a little bit about it so that I can give you a plug on the show. You can reach out to me, as I say, on LinkedIn by Richard Midson, M-I-D-S-O-N. You can comment on there or send me a direct message, however you want to do it on there. Number two, if you'd like to be a guest host on the show and want to introduce yourself to everyone, then head to thepublicrelationspodcast.com and click on the guest link on the menu there as well. That gives you all the details about how you can take part in the show. And I would love to have you on. If you are working on the coal face, on the front line, whatever you want to call it, of PR today, and you are slogging away trying to get your client or your organization some coverage and some conversation generated around it, I would love to hear what you are getting up to. In the meantime, whatever you are up to this week, whatever campaigns you're working on, I hope you have an absolutely amazing week, and I will speak to you next week.